Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us here in the great world, wide world, brought together by the internet. We are back. The last three guys do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We are rested from our Super Bowl extravaganza. Had to take the week off because, boy, that Super Bowl was just amazing. We'll talk about that in a second. We're going to have Coach Gene Hill of the Georgia State Panther women's basketball team calling in. He should be with us in a matter of moments. He's going to talk about the Georgia State Panthers' four-game winning streak, including two surprising victories, one at home against the Little Rock Trojans, which is the first time in the program's history that they defeated Little Rock, and then a follow-up big win against Louisiana Raging Cajuns in the Cajun Dome, another venue that Georgia State has not won in on the women's side. A lot of other stories going on with that team, and of course we'll get into that when Coach Hill calls in, and we expect him to do so in a matter of moments. But again, a lot going on. We have the Super Bowl to talk about. Give our post-mortem to that victory by the Kansas City Chiefs coming back and defeating the San Francisco 49ers. And guys, I don't know about you, but now it looks like I think the Falcons just got off the hook, and it looks like Kyle Shanahan just had another collapse at his feet. Guy just can't catch a break in the Super Bowl here.
I mean, is he can't catch a break or he won't give himself a break?
Right. Because he did it again.
He did it again. I mean, the first time.
He did it again.
To paraphrase Britney Spears, oops,
I was thinking the same. I promise you I was going to say that, John. You got me before I even said it. I probably got the thought.
Oops, he did it again, you know.
Yeah, man. First time, shame on me. Or is it the first time, shame on you?
No, first time, shame on me. Second time, shame on you.
There it is.
Or it's the other way. Yeah. Like, you should know better.
No, that's
he
right.
Did not,
that's
he did not.
He should know better.
He did not learn his lesson from the first time.
Yeah. Go ahead and run with it, Daniel.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, and he's going to probably become a verb now. He Kyle Shanahan. You know, that's probably what it's going to be now. This is the second time he's done this. And, you know, the first time, of course, he was not the head coach. But this time you are responsible for this collapse.
Yep.
And this time, this one might be a little bit, I'm not going to say worse, because of the magnitude of the lead that we lost when he was here in Atlanta against New England. That was a 28-3 lead. But I will say this, you're up 20-10 with 10 minutes to go in the game. And you guys sat and watched it with me. So,
Daniel, we're putting you on hold right now as Gene Hill is calling in. He is the head coach of the Georgia State Women's Basketball Panthers, as promised, as promoted here on the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. So we'll table the Super Bowl discussion right now and get back to that. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are doing exceptionally.
Hey, Gene, how you doing?
We are doing exceptionally, Coach. And, boy, when you say you're doing well, you are not whistling Dixie, as it were. Four-game win streak for your Panthers, including a sweep of the Louisiana squads, winning down at the Cajun Dome on Thursday and then journeying to Monroe and Fant Using on Saturday, beating the Louisiana Warhawks, sweeping your series with the Warhawks this year. A four-game win streak. Your guys are now tied for 10th, I believe, with Georgia Southern is in that as well. And I think there's one other team in there as well. Arkansas State, I believe, is in that tie for as well. But let's talk about your trip to Louisiana first, specifically your game with the Cajuns on Thursday. It's your first victory for the team in the Cajun Dome. What was that? How did that feel for you guys?
Well, you know, we felt like, you know, that if we came out and did the little things, that we would give ourselves a chance at the end. And everyone really came in, locked in, and ready to play for 40 minutes. And I think, you know, right now the buy-in on defense is why we're seeing some turnaround in our play and everything. So really proud of the young ladies, and definitely a big win to get down in Lafayette, a tough place to play, a well-coached team. So definitely happy and excited about that win.
Yeah, and four game win streak. Things kind of got started with last week with Arkansas State. The Red Wolves have been down from last season. They're breaking in a new coach, but still, and then to beat Little Rock, a team Georgia State has never beaten the Trojans before. Was that kind of the same mentality going in, where everyone kind of buys into what you're selling, what your game plan was?
No question about it. You know, we really, even going back to the Arkansas State game, we felt like when we played them the first game, we had that game, and it's a game that we gave away at the end there. And from that game, it seemed like just kind of things just started going down for us, whether it was injuries or just bad breaks and everything. So we really talked about, once that game came back around, you know, it being a opportunity for a rebirth. And so we was really excited to be able to rebound and actually get that victory. And then going into Little Rock, I mean, you know, anytime you face him, I mean, Joe was going for his 800 victory. Right. So that just tells you, yeah, how much success he's had over his career. And I think Georgia State beat him the first time they ever faced. So they was 1-11 at the opportunity at that time. But, you know, they had 11 game winning streak over us, and to be able to come out on our home court and to get that victory against them just really, really meant a lot for the players. And I think gave them a little bit of confidence that if you do those little things, again, going back to defense, taking great shots, taking care of the ball, that you can compete.
Exactly. Again, speaking with head coach Gene Hill, coach of the Georgia State Women's Basketball Panthers, got a four-game winning streak and a very successful trip into Louisiana, defeating both the Cajuns of Louisiana University and the Warhawks of Louisiana Dash Monroe. Daniel, you got a question.
Yeah, Gene, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Daniel. What about you?
I'm doing well. Listen, I think the most extravagant, well, there's two things that are extravagant about this four-game winning streak. One, you did it after coming off of a seven-game losing streak.
Yeah.
And then you did it with Allison Johnson and Jada Lewis out with significant injuries. How were you able to, motivate this team, or how was this team able to come together and just turn this thing around so rapidly? Because I believe that you guys can go on a run here.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we talked about after the trip to the Carolinas was, you know, obviously we have some injuries, and, you know, everyone's telling us, oh, we're so young and everything. But I told the players was that, you know, I'm not coaching them for next year. I'm coaching them for right now, you know. And if they was focused on next year, you know, that's not where I'm at. I want to get better right now. I want to continue to compete and continue to try to make the tournament. Because the one thing I told them, I said, the great thing about being in a mid-major conference is if you make the conference tournament, it doesn't matter what seed you make it in, whether you're 1 or 10. Okay, everyone has a zero record there. You know, you win that tournament. Yeah, you start over. You win that tournament, you're going to the NCAA. So I think that was a big thing, you know, just to kind of tell them, hey, we still have some hope here. We're still playing for something. And these are the things that we need to focus on, you know, that next person up. Obviously, to lose Jada Lewis and Allison Johnson are big losses. But, you know, we felt like, you know, hey, it's nothing we could do about it. We have to continue to play. And, you know, a lot of times you have players on the bench who feel like, hey, I should be getting that opportunity. Well, here you go. Here's your opportunity right now. Let's prove it. And right now some kids are stepping up and taking advantage of that opportunity.
And what I really love about your team during this streak is your defense. You're only averaging about – around 50 points given up a game during this stretch. You got the defensive shoes really clamped down, and I think it starts with a lot of your younger players like Taylor Hosenduff. She has come out really strong, 8 rebounds against Monroe. That's one of the things that your team is. It's you said it yourself, it's extremely young. But for some reason, a light just got flipped on, and they're playing exceptional. And really, at this juncture of the season, Coach, they're no longer true freshmen. They're sophomores.
Right, right.
They got that experience. And, of course, you still have to worry about the freshman wall coming up. But they've got the experience coming in, and they seem to finally are playing together. They seem finally are starting to gel.
Well, you know, we talked about that also, John. You know, I asked the players, you know, I said, think about all the most important moments in your life. I said, most of those moments are created with other people. You don't think about significant moments in your life alone, you know.
Yes.
And so when you want to do something great, you need teammates. You need people to do it with you. So if we want to do some things great, we have to be together and we have to play together. And right now, I think everyone is really focusing on those little things. And defense is the first thing, you know. We talked about how defense could travel, you know. You can take that on the road. You can't count on your offense, but if you can, you know, you could defend and give a force contested shots and only one rebound and take care of the ball, don't beat yourself, you'll have a chance. And that's all we have to, you know, hope for right now, is having a chance, putting ourselves in those situations. And, you know, right now we're doing that. We got a tough week here coming up with App State and Coastal Carolina.
Oh, yes.
Coming in. But, you know, we just got to continue to focus on what we've been doing well and not try to do anything more.
All right, Leon has a question for you, Coach.
Hey, Gene.
All right, Leon.
Well, you know, we're the media. We're all about the storylines, and, you know, we're all about the dramatization of it. You know, of course, it's your job to go off and keep a straight face. And
basically ignore us.
Right.
Yeah.
But we're going to rub it in a little bit. I mean, imagine the storyline, the redemption, because all the teams you have coming up, you have Appalachian State. Remember the L you guys took to them? You guys can give right back to them. And you have the momentum. Coastal Carolina, you could give it right back to them. And then those rivals is Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you guys are in the position right now to just go off and just right the ship. And what a time to play. I mean, this is – it's a great time to be alive right now, Coach. You just got to say that.
No question about it. Every day is, regardless, you know. But, you know, that's what we talked about, is that we want to be improving. We want to play our best basketball at the end of the year, you know. Yeah. And I think we're starting to do that right now, but we still have a long ways to go. But no question about it, obviously, we're trying to take it one game at a time and not look past Appalachian State. But we have to make sure that we're playing towards our standards, you know. We can't get caught into looking ahead or thinking about revenge or anything like that. We just got to make sure that we do what we need to do every day, play how Georgia State should play. You know, we talk about us being a blue-collar team, you know, just doing all the little things, nothing fancy. And I think kids are kind of starting to buy into that, and because of that, that's why we're having this success.
Right on.
And, Coach, we want to talk to you just a minute. Jada Lewis, again, injury play. She's had her share of injuries this season, has gotten in, but she did hit a milestone over your weekend.
Yeah.
1,000 career points for the redshirt junior from McEachern High School in Powder Springs. That must have been a great year. I'm sure you're happy for getting it. And honestly, now it's probably a weight off your shoulders that this has finally occurred. Now you can focus on the rest of the season.
Well, you know, actually, we hadn't even talked about it before. You know, we acknowledged it yesterday when Jada got it and congratulated her and talked about all the things that she's done and meant for the program. But Jada hasn't really even talked about it. I haven't talked to her about it. So, you know, I think the thing right now for Jada is she wants to get in that tournament and she wants to continue to be playing well and even playing better and have a chance for the NCAA. I think that's the most important thing for her right now. And so, you know, you want to see players who've been in this program 3-4 years have some success and you know, have those opportunities. And obviously she's meant a lot to this program here.
Yeah, honest. Yeah, exactly. And Coach, looking at the Sun Belt conference tournament, well, really the best word I can use to describe it is weird. You need a PhD to kind of understand the ins and the outs. You have to go through a little mini tournament to get to New Orleans. And looking at the standings, you're only 3 games out of that fourth seed to host the mini tournament with 5 games to play. I mean, if you can keep this run going, you could surprise a lot of people and maybe slide into that fourth spot.
You know, John, I to be honest with you, I haven't even thought that far ahead. You know, it's about, you know, I've watched 3 games of Appalachian State today, been locked up in my office away from the family right now. They know what time of year it is. You know, I'm not thinking about March right now. You know, it's about, you know, this Thursday right now and just getting in the tournament, and we'll go from there.
Well, you got a two-game lead over 11-seeded Texas State, but you do have to play the Bobcats later on in the year in San Marcos. Not exactly the best place to play, but, boy, they have been really struggling without Tasha Levitt now that she has finally graduated. But, you know, maybe there's a W to be picked up over there down in Texas State. But, again, you're focused on Appalachian State, and you're focused on Coastal Carolina as well. They are leading the league. They've got that 11-2 record. They have really turned it up with that Williams kid.
Well, no question about it. DJ is probably the best player in the league. I mean, she's just a kid that you admire how she plays and her whole story of what she's been through.
Yes,
and she's just playing with, no question, she's playing with a lot of energy and a lot of passion. They have a senior-led team and veterans. They've been through it. They're a balanced team. I mean, although DJ is the leader of that team, they're well-balanced with some other players, with the post player Hamilton and Cash at the guard. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're a solid team, so they're going to be a tough out for anyone. But we just got to worry about App State first, and then we'll focus on them.
All right, Daniel, you got anything else?
Oh no, nah, man, it's always a pleasure to talk to Coach, man.
Yes.
Every single time he comes on, he enlightens us with that every time. So it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man.
Yeah, it is. And also, Coach, we're talking a lot about your freshman players. You got a couple of other players who are not eligible this season because of some transfer issues. I'm thinking about Hannah Sadler. So really, I mean, that young core is there, and now that it's finally starting to come together. I mean, it's been a little later than you thought, but it is coming together. You knew this was going to happen eventually, right?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, we felt like that we have talent, and we feel like we still even got more talent sitting out with Hannah Sadler and Tanaya Worth also.
Right.
But, you know, it's a matter of just putting it together, and it's always a growing process. And so we're still in this. We're going to finish out this, and then we'll worry about those two young ladies getting in the mix next year.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Always appreciate you taking some time out. And, again, with this program – finally getting some good luck, getting some good results, moving up in the standings. Hopefully we can get this thing going and get a good berth. If not, hopefully make it the NCAAs. But again, you got to lock up that Sun Belt berth first. You're on your way. A couple more W's should do it. And I'll look forward to talking to you during the postseason about this.
Hey, Coach, I got.
Sounds good.
I'm sorry, Leon's got one last thing.
Yeah.
I got one last thing. You know, this reminds me of, you know, it's like a personal story of mine happened 2 days ago. My nephew and I were in LA Fitness, right? We were playing basketball, all right? We were, you know, we just walked into the gym, and these guys, they've been playing for about an hour before we got there, so they're already in rhythm. We were playing again to 15. We were down 3-13, all right? We're down 3-13. I gave my nephew a look, and it's like, ain't no way in the world we losing this game. We locked him down. We went on a 12-0 run and went on to win the game.
All right.
True story. Kind of reminds me of what
how many shots did you make? Your nephew made all the shots.
Oh no, you know, I was out there, you know.
No, that's you know, man, that's what it's about, man. You just can't quit, man. You got to fight to the final horn goes off, man, regardless of what you're playing, man. You know, so definitely we're trying to continue to fight, man. That's it.
Yes, sir.
Well, keep it up, Coach. You're doing a great job, and as I said, look forward to talking to you once this whole tournament situation gets settled down. And like we said, the Sun Belt is weird, and it's about the only way I can. It's about the only word I can use to describe it.
Well, let me give you some warning, okay? Don't spend too much time learning it, because it'll be something different next year. That's all I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, good. Glad to hear that.
Well, you guys take care. Again, thanks for all you do for women's basketball, and especially Georgia State. We really appreciate the support, and look forward to talking with you in the future.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Not a problem, Coach.
All right. Take care, guys.
Go Panthers. That was head coach Gene Hill, Georgia State women's basketball, joining us here on the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast, talking about the Panthers' four-game winning streak done primarily with their freshman core. I say freshman core, it's not really a freshman core, more first-year players. Really, as you look down the lineup, really the only player who's been there game in, game out, and stayed on the roster is the senior Shaquandra Miller-McRae. Basically, there is a shot blocker, But now the freshmen are starting to come up and show what they can do. Taylor Hosendove, of course, being one of those middle post players. Joel Johnson, Cameron Zayak has become a very strong outside shooter. Joel Johnson in the middle, and of course, Taylor Henderson as well. Maybe not getting as much play as Taylor Hosendove, but Henderson out of Troy, Alabama, and probably the and of course, Mariah Taylor as well, who was the class 5 to 7A player of the year in Alabama. That's who I was thinking of, Mariah Taylor. I mean, that talent is there. They're finally starting to play together. And, again, the only thing that Coach Hill is missing is that veteran leadership. But now, as we made the point, they're no longer freshmen. They're no longer first-year players. They are seasoned, and they're finally starting to figure it out. And we just hope that it's not too little too late, that they can make that run, get themselves a good seed. Now, I said it was weird. Here's what I mean. Seeds 1 and 2, they get an express lane trip to New Orleans. They are immediately in the semifinals. Now, this is where it gets a little unusual. 12 and 11 stay home. They're done. And right now that's ULM and Texas State. ULM has a record of 3-21. Two of those losses to Georgia State. They're four out of that final slot with five to play. They're done. Texas State, they are two out of that final slot with five to play. They are on life support right now. They just got to hope that one of those three teams that are two games above them, Appalachian State, Georgia Southern, and Georgia State, hits a bit of a bump in the road. And they would really love Southern or State to do it simply because they have to play those two squads, not this week, but the week following, and that'll be a home game down in San Marcos. Now, as I said, this is where it's going to get a little weird. You're going to have two mini tournaments to decide those other two slots, and they will be at the seeds. The three seed and the four seed would host those. And right now, three is UT Arlington, four would be Little Rock. Troy is in second. They would host these mini tournaments. Now, the three seed would host, besides three, and I'm not sure this is right, but I think it is. I think 3, 6, 7, and 10 would go to UT Arlington to play a mini 14 tournament, and the winner of that goes to New Orleans. And, of course, on the other side, you would have 4, 5, 8, and 9. I believe that's how that goes. Four place, nine.
No, numerically, that would be correct. Okay. That would have to be correct if they're going to do it and they're going to stick with the seeding,
right,
or whatnot. That's how they would have to do it.
Yeah, so like I said, that is how it would go. And right now, this is right now, as I said, Arlington and Little Rock would host. And Little Rock would, in the Little Rock bracket, you would get Louisiana, Arkansas State, and Appalachia. No, Arkansas, no, we get, let's see. 5, 7, and 8. Yeah, I think it would be it's Little Rock, Louisiana, Appalachian State, and Georgia Southern. And in the Arlington bracket would be Arlington, South Alabama, Arkansas State, and Georgia State. But again, there's a lot. Those six teams from Little Rock to Georgia State, they are separated by just three games. So this could shake itself out in a myriad of different ways. And we're just not going to know what's going to happen until probably that final weekend of the season. Right now, big game for Georgia State with Appalachian State on Thursday at the Sports Arena. They are tied at 5-8. Panthers desperately need that victory to at least give them some breathing room into the tournament and get somebody behind them. So that's, like I said, it's weird, but as Coach Hill said, next year they're going to probably will do something else. And the big thing is, I think the reason why they're doing this is because the tournament got moved into the Smoothie Center. That's where the Pelicans play. And I think that that arena did not want the full tournament coming in. I think we're fine for just I think what happened was, it's like, look, we're fine with just the weekend, but we're not going to take everybody. So I think that's why they arranged this, because usually we were playing at the University of New Orleans Privateer Arena Lakefront Coliseum on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, a little outside New Orleans. But we're moving to the Smoothie Center, which is across the street from the Superdome, which is where the Sun Belt offices are located. And there have been a lot of other rumors flying around about where the basketball conference tournament is going to go. I've heard rumors that it might wind up in Pensacola. They're making a bit of a run at it, which is unusual because Florida does not have a team in the Sun Belt as of right now. Closest would be, I guess, Troy would be the closest, or maybe South Alabama and Mobile. But and like I said, it's weird. Coach Hill said it's probably going to change, but that's what we're dealing with right now. All right, so that's our side conversation here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Talk to Coach Gene Hill. Now let's get back to the Super Bowl. And Kyle Shanahan, who did not learn his lesson from the Atlanta Falcons collapse, where he tried throwing it, where running the football would have been the better bet. And he just gave the ball over to Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes made him pay with the Kansas City Chiefs coming back to win that Super Bowl 31-20 over the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, but, you know, Daniel was really going into
– Yeah, he was going into it.
Yeah, let's go and continue that on, Daniel.
Yeah, if you remember where you were.
I do. Okay, I do. And I start over just in case people are just in that joint – just in case folks were just joining.
Well, if they're just joining us, rewind to the start, play that, and now come back
play
to
that,
here.
And then come back to here.
Exactly.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. So, listen, 20-10, you got Kansas City on the ropes with about 10 minutes to go. I think I would say roughly 10 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. And in this situation, see, it's a little bit different from the Atlanta Falcons when he was with Atlanta. He had a pass-happy offense, and he had running backs that could actually catch the football out of the backfield.
Right.
So the offense was really centered around Matt Ryan and what Matt Ryan was doing and all the weapons Matt Ryan had, and he had all day to throw. Yeah, we had a great running game, but we didn't have a running game quite like the San Francisco 49ers have. John, Leon, they had three running backs, one of them which was Tevin Coleman.
Right.
Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, and Mostert, who had actually just came on, and nobody just knew where he came from and fitted in just great. Don't understand why those three guys didn't get a chance to run the football. Don't pass the ball no more. Run it. Mm-hmm. Run the clock out, because you have to understand who you got on the other side. You got Patrick Mahomes, who rattled off 21 points in 10 minutes. 10 minutes. And the play that actually broke their back was the 3rd-and-15 play for 44 yards to Tyreek Hill. That hurt them. And I said, once that happened, I said, I don't think they're going to recover from that. And I don't even think they had scored yet. I think they were still down 20-10 when that happened. So it was such a big backbreaker to them, and they did not know what to do in that particular case. And another thing, too, you have to give coaching credit to Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, who's the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. They actually saw the matchup that they should have seen from the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. They exposed Richard Sherman's health and his age. Listen, Richard Sherman's going to go down as one of their all-time greats. He's one of the great cornerbacks in this league, but he cannot catch up with Tyreek Hill. And when they put him on Tyreek Hill and they found that matchup, he really had nothing to do. He had nothing left.
He
couldn't keep up.
He got exposed, really. I mean,
got exposed.
What do they say? Father Time is undefeated?
Father Time is undefeated, and it will always be undefeated. Right. And remember, he came off an Achilles surgery, too.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know he's a step slower than what he was when he was in Seattle. Right. So a lot of factors can play in. I'm just going to tell you, like I told you guys, it was Andy Reid's time.
Yeah.
This was Andy Reid's turn. It was his time, and he took great advantage of it. And you know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. But, again, Kyle Shanahan, they're going to look at him, and they're going to say, wow, you did it again.
Yeah, exactly.
You did it again.
Yeah. So do you think that, in reference to Richard Sherman, do you believe that – performance that less than, you know, we call it an under par performance that Richard Sherman put on during the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that right there will overshadow the fact that he was even a cornerback on a NFC winning team, or are people going to hold that against him? Like, you know, Rich, you know, you had a good run, but it's time for you to go high five it with Darrell Reeves on the couch.
Yes. Let's be honest, guys. NFL fans have notoriously short memories. And once he got exposed for that, he's pretty much not going to be looked at the same way. He's like, all right, you had a great career. Now I want you to spend the next 5 years getting your bus ready for Canton. Not that bust, the head bust.
Yeah, because he's going to be a because next year, because you know he doesn't, as Darrell Revis put it out, which I don't believe Darrell Revis, and he did that in good spirits on putting out that he's just a zone cornerback. We're talking about Richard Sherman,
right?
But it's going to be to the point now next year if he decides to come back, which I believe that he will.
I think he will too, but
he's going to be a marked man.
Oh yeah.
They're going to make sure that the best wide receivers on the opposing team will follow him. You don't have to follow us. We will travel to you. And they're going to exploit that all year, and they're going to try to run Richard Sherman into retirement. It's like next year. I mean, I know this is the NBA season right now, okay? Yeah. But there's so many storylines going on right now in the offseason football. It's like Young and the Restless here. I mean, but we got to look at, like, they're going to try to run Richard Sherman into retirement. You know what I mean? I think that's a foregone conclusion.
Yes.
Next year. If there and the quarterback question, I mean, we're not just talking about the running back question. We got the Myles Garrett reinstatement, which we all kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, that was coming eventually.
You know, but from the quarterback perspective, whose career is in greater, you know, if you're – who would you rather be? Would you rather be Matthew Stafford, who has not performed up to expectations? Or would you be Jameis Winston, who has not performed up to expectations? Who's more than likely going to see themselves to another team? You know, because, you know, Jameis did 8-8 last year. But also he threw – he went 5,000 yards.
But he threw interceptions like they were cars that Oprah Winfrey's giving away.
He was the first quarterback in history.
But wait a minute, but he may get that corrected because he had LASIK eye surgery. So he may get that corrected.
Okay.
He may get that corrected. I mean, I'd rather be Jameis Winston. I mean, look, 30 touchdowns, you were the all-time – You led the league in passing yards last year. You also threw 30 interceptions, but that can be corrected, right?
We think.
Matthew Stafford, it might be time for him to make a move somewhere. It's not cutting it in Detroit. Since you've been in Detroit, I think they've only made the playoffs twice.
Right.
Maybe. And correct me if I'm wrong
maybe,
on
maybe,
that.
Maybe.
But
that's a
And even if they've even if they've made the playoffs, they haven't made much of an impression once there.
Oh, they hadn't won a game.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a playoff win. So, no. You know, I mean, with Jameis Winston, no, he doesn't either, but hell, he's never made the playoffs. But with Winston, you can kind of see he's young. He's what, 26, I believe, 27?
Yeah, he's still young.
Like, the threshold right now for Stafford is Stafford's in his 30s.
Yeah.
And he's been around for a while. So, you know, Stafford's ceiling is completely closing in versus Jameis Winston. And he still has some room. He still has a sky to look up at. So, I mean, it's only because of the youth. But I say this, guys, Winston has to get better. He has to get better. And I don't know if it's the system or whatever it is, but he has to get better.
Well, he's got to make better decisions. That's one thing.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
that's
and
exactly
also,
what I mean.
And also, Tampa Bay doesn't have anybody else.
Yeah, their quarterback, they're really a year away. If they're going to make that step towards another quarterback, they will have to really evaluate Jameis Winston this year to see what step they're going to – which direction they're going to go in. Mr. Stafford, I think if they don't make a move this offseason – they're going to see what he does next offseason. They're going to see what he does next season.
Yeah, they got to make a move. They got to make a move soon.
Yeah, because I think he signed a nice lucrative contract that he never lived up to. So I don't believe that he's going to be able to get another that big payday again within the National Football League.
Well, hopefully the payday is taken care of. He's set for life. He's made the wise investment, and right now it's all about his legacy.
Right. So what do you think is the bigger story? Speaking of payday. Okay, you think it's going to be the Patrick Mahomes payday, which we know is coming.
Right.
Or the team that Thomas Brady is going to land on.
Probably the Tom Brady's going to land. I mean, he's probably
– and it shouldn't be.
He's probably going to be – it's probably going to be New England, let's be honest. I don't see him going anywhere else. At least Robert Kraft will have his say, and he will. He'll have the final say. He's going to stay where he is. I think Belichick, if Belichick was in control, I think Belichick would rather do it now. You know, cut the cord now so that the drop-off from Tom Brady isn't as steep and that he can build New England back up and be dominant pretty quick. I think Belichick, if it was totally up to Belichick, and he's kind of mad that he's kind of annoyed that it's not, Brady would be gone. But I think Kraft and his public relations firm knows how important it is for Tom Brady to stay with New England. And I think at the end of the day, I think Kraft's wills will overshadow Belichick's.
Where are you at with this, Daniel?
You know what? There's a report out there saying that the Oakland Raiders are prepared to offer Brady.
You mean the Las Vegas Raiders?
The Las Vegas, yeah, but whatever.
The Raiders.
They are formerly. Roger Goodell said,
"Hey,
they are
sick of these teams changing cities right now. Yeah. That it's ridiculous." Okay, and it's hard for me to keep up. But the Las Vegas Raiders are set to offer Brady 2 years worth $60 million. Now, like I said, I've seen reports about this, so I don't know. I don't know how much of this is, you know, legit or whatnot. I don't think Oakland has came out and said anything about it not being a false report, but, you know, we'll see.
I mean, if you're Derek Carr.
Derek Carr,
it's the first person you think about, right?
Yeah, you feel like this is giving you a smack in the nuts. I mean.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Trust you to get us to where we want to go.
It's like that is...
But it should be Pat Mahomes. I mean, we're really talking about here. I mean, arguably, without question, he's probably the best young quarterback in football right now.
Yes.
We're talking about a best young quarterback under 25. Or 25
and
under.
Lamar Jackson might have something to say about that, but Lamar Jackson doesn't have a ring.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the playoff victories.
Right.
So, and that's where we separate. That's why I say Mahomes might be better. Because that's when we separate. Mahomes has been to the AFC Championship game at least twice. So until Jackson can get that ring, hey, listen, he's the most dynamic player we've seen since Vic. But that's without going safe. But this Mahomes kid, man,
I mean,
he just makes decisions that's just unbelievable. And he makes the throws, you know. His payday is coming, and it'll be coming sooner rather than later because the Kansas City Chiefs know what they have in this guy. But I tell you what, though, I believe that the Mahomes and Jackson friendly rivalry, I think this is the next Peyton Manning Tom Brady kind of thing we're going to have going. These two guys are going to be around for a long time, and they are the future of the league as far as quarterback play is concerned.
But talking about playing up to expectations, we look at the genius of the GM, you know, to make decisions. I mean, because when you make the right decision, it pays off. I.e., the decision to bring in Aaron Rodgers back in 2009. Granted, he went 6-10 his first season, but that was his first full season starting. Second season delivers a Super Bowl victory, 2011. All right. Then we look at John Elway. Brings in Peyton Manning. You know, people were arguing if Peyton Manning was washed up after leaving the Colts. Mm-hmm. Brings him in. Peyton Manning, I mean, he just defecates on the league. 55 touchdowns. You know, granted, the first time they went to the Super Bowl, they had the Super Bowl appearance, which the Dolphins have not had since 1998. Or the 98 or 99. I know they won two back-to-back.
Okay.
It's 98-99, before the Rams went off and took the AFC over for a little while. Or the NFC over for a little while. But either or, John Elway looked like a somewhat of a genius at the time, you know, for bringing in Peyton and him, Peyton Manning, going for bringing in a Super Bowl victory and two Super Bowl appearances.
Right.
But now with the Chiefs, bringing in Patrick Mahomes, drafting him, he performs up to expectations. I mean, talk about on schedule. And then you look at Lamar Jackson. I mean, the decision that the Ravens made to bring in Lamar Jackson was not popular at the time. You know, he didn't even stink it up, really. He actually scared me when he played my team in the playoffs. I mean, I was afraid for my team.
Yes.
We somehow limped up out of there, and we go on to lose, usually like we usually do to you know, Tom Brady in there, like we always do. But next year, I look for Lamar Jackson to take the next step. and possibly represent the AFC in the Super Bowl next year, possibly. If everything, if we look at how history has patterns, I think it could possibly happen next year.
So it'll be a Kansas City Baltimore AFC Championship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that sounds about right.
It could possibly happen. I mean, anything is possible. You know.
Yeah, sure.
You know, anything can happen. You know, there's a couple of quarterbacks right now that are on the move that can have something to say about that. You know, we look at, you know, the Tom Brady situation, the Cam Newton situation. I wanted to touch a little more, you know, with the Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You know, do you believe that the motivation for Bill Belichick getting Tom Brady out of there is more so about legacy, like Bill Belichick wants to prove that, you know, he could do it without Tom? Or does Tom want to leave to prove that he can actually do it without Bill?
That's a tough one. That is. That's a tough one. Of course, you're assuming that ego trumps ring.
I mean, what have they left to accomplish?
No, they don't have anything left to accomplish. Unless getting a seventh, getting the record. That's probably it. Because what, are they tied with Pittsburgh for most Super Bowls wins?
In the shoulder?
Yes.
Yes, so one more would give New England the record.
But, you know, there's nothing left for him to get it. I mean, you got to argue the point, like, Tom, why are you even still playing?
Yeah.
At this point, I mean,
honestly, probably doesn't know what else to do.
I know, right? Like, dang, aren't you – you know, you got his peers. I mean, you got people like Peyton is in retirement right now.
Yep.
Eli has just went on to retirement.
Eli got pushed to retirement. I don't think it was his choice. I think he saw the writing on the wall and rather said, you know what, I'm not going to deal with going to a new system.
Roethlisberger is a year away, I'm thinking. But the writing is on the wall for Ben. I mean, I believe he's about a year away.
Yeah.
Drew Brees is a year away.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the quarterbacks, Phillip, if he's not a year away, he might be on the way. Cause I believe that he'll get picked up, but will Phillip does a team out there trust Phillip Rivers with the keys to their bins? I don't know if I'm going with John's theory, which seems more probable, with Phillip Rivers going to the Bengals and serving as a mentor to Joe Burrows. That's possible.
Yes.
You know, or maybe going to Miami and that's guaranteed retirement after next year. You know, or, you know, they were saying that, you know, he moved his family to Florida. So, you know, they're like, hey, maybe Phil to the Bucks. Possibly, you know, we don't know. But I'm thinking, you know, with John's original suggestion with Phil to the Bengals, you know, that'd be interesting.
We speak of these quarterbacks, guys. I want to go back to one, and you mentioned Drew Brees.
Yes.
Now, the Saints have a huge decision to make about Taysom Hill.
Yes.
Because Taysom Hill feels that he is a franchise quarterback. And you better believe that guy, he can throw. He's actually an athlete. You know, and to have a quarterback like that you can't stop in the backfield or stop in as a receiver or even stop as a quarterback, man, that's tough. That's tough. So the Saints are going to have a huge decision to make because – he's not going to sign unless you say, hey, I want to be a franchise quarterback.
But doesn't he have to prove that he's a franchise quarterback? And doesn't he have to prove
it? Well,
I mean,
you have to give him the time.
Yeah, you have to give him the time. Yeah, so either –
And the Saints haven't given him the time to do that, you know, because of course, Drew Brees is there. So
and
we won't
Teddy
know
Bridgewater
until
there.
We put you back there. Yeah. And Bridgewater. Yeah. Which I don't think Bridgewater will be there.
Yeah, he's going to get starting position. They're going to have – If Terry Bridgewater stays, he will be the heir apparent.
Right.
He's proven too much. Or
which means Hill won't be there.
Right. They're going to have to get rid of Taysom Hill. Then, but where does he go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, guys. Before Taysom Hill made that announcement that I deserve to be a franchise quarterback, I've never heard of the guy.
Me neither.
I was like, wait a minute, Taysom who? The Tyson Chicken? Who is this guy?
The offensive coordinator for the Saints gave him an endorsement stating that he throws a better ball than Lamar Jackson.
All right, but again, as Daniel said, he's got to get on the field and prove it.
Yeah.
And how is he going to get – I guess, you know, he's going to – how did he play during preseason? I assume that's when he played.
He's 29 years old.
Whoa, he's been around the block a time or two.
Yeah, so what type of contract do you sign him to if he
It has to be incentive laden.
Oh, John, you're a stiff businessman, man. There's no friends on. There's no friends at the table here.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we'll give you an incentive. I mean, like I said, I can't.
At least with all the other guys that who have done this, and I'm thinking of Brock Osweiler, I'm thinking of Ryan Tannehill.
Ooh.
They proved it. Now maybe we knew it was a flash in the pan, and I think in Tannehill's case we knew it was a flash in the pan, but they got on the field and proved it.
Yeah.
Taysom Hill has not proved it on a field because, as Daniel said, he hasn't been on the field.
Yeah, and we got to be honest here, you know.
Well, as a quarterback, he hasn't been on the field.
Right.
He's lined up as a running back, a tight end. He's come in and blocked punts. I mean, he's done that.
He's definitely
like,
he is a
tremendous asset to your team. Yeah, he's an awesome football player. But are you an awesome quarterback is the question.
And
that's what you want to be. That's what they drafted you to be, a quarterback.
Yeah, in 2 years playing quarterback, he has a grand total of a 46.2% completion rate and 119 yards total in the air. And no touchdowns.
Right.
And a passer rating of 46.6.
All right, we are the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We've been talking NFL. Let's switch gears just a moment. Talk about the NBA All-Star Game. It's going to be on in about an hour as we're taping. It's been slam dunk contest was yesterday. I got to admit, ever since the big names bowed out of the slam dunk contest, I've basically skipped it. Of course, I was pretty busy all last night, so I really didn't get a chance to see it. I know Leon was talking about it. You were talking about it with Daniel about how Aaron Gordon and the other person he was with,
Derrick Jones,
Miami Heat. They kind of got basically they were up. I think the explanation that I heard is they wanted to have another dunk off, but one of the judges messed up on his scoring.
I mean, Aaron Gordon did just a ridiculous dunk that led to him just taking his shoes off and said, I'm not dunked anymore. that's how bad it got. I mean, the dunks they were pulling off were just off the meter. I was going for Dwight Howard personally because I'm a Laker fan, if everybody who didn't know. But, he came out with the Kobe jersey, the Kobe basketball.
That's basically what this weekend is. It's a Kobe Bryant tribute.
Right.
/ memorial.
But the creativity that Derrick Jones and Aaron Gordon came with, and they were making their dunks. Aaron Gordon did not score underneath a 50 in any of his dunks.
Right.
They were all 10s across the board. So,
I
was like to the point where, Dwayne Wade is rumored that tried to walk off.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Wade tried to it's going to be a tie. Let's walk off. They straight stopped Dwayne Wade from walking off. They're like, no, we're seeing this to the end. So, someone had to win. Someone had to lose. I personally believe that it was a tie because the last dunk.
I do too.
That's going to be the public consensus because the last dunk that Derrick Jones did is like he tried to attempt a dunk from the free throw line windmill, which he actually stepped inside the line, but by then he had so much equity in the contest that he could have just went up there and just did a one hand off 1 foot dunk and people that gave him his props. And Aaron Gordon kind of jumped over a 7'5" Seneca Lee's Taco Fall.
Yep.
And Taco
and didn't win.
Yeah.
And still didn't win because Dwayne Wade gave him a 9. D Wade gave him a 9 and people are calling foul because Dwayne Wade is an alumni of the Heat.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I personally believe that was a 10 dunk. I think the world believes that. But at the same time, if someone wouldn't have lost, we would have still been here to right now watching the dunk contest because they were making all their dunks and they were just sent back. It just went on into gratuity.
Right.
Or they should have did a judge's decision. You know what I'm saying? Like a boxing match or something like that. All right, we're going to go to the scorecards here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then if they would have done that, Aaron Gordon would have won because you would have seen that he had perfect dunks all night long. I'm going to say this, guys, and this is kind of going along with my last few minutes, so that means I'm not going to have anything to say in the last few minutes.
Uh-oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. The dunk contest, I think All-Star Weekend is really back. And I've always said that the NBA has the best All-Star weekend there is. They have the absolute best All-Star weekend. The skills challenge was great. You had a center, Bam Adebayo, who, by the way, during that skills challenge, you have to hit threes. Bam Adebayo hit 2 3-pointers, or was it three? No, it was three. He hit 3 3-pointers in that game. Do you know how many threes he's hit all season?
Two.
One.
Oh, one. Okay.
One. One. He's hit 1 3-pointer all year, and he was able to win the skills challenge because that's part of the challenge. You have to hit a 3-pointer. So
yes,
he won the skills challenge. Buddy Hield and Devin Booker, they put on an impressive performance in the 3-point shootout, especially at the end where Hield had to hit the shot to win the 3-point shootout. And then you got the dunk contest, and to see Dwight Howard, as Leon mentioned, to see him in the dunk contest, I thought that was grand. I thought it was great. He tried to revive his dunk from 2008, where he put the Superman cape on,
mm-hmm,
or whatnot. But what I liked about it was that this man is 34 years old and he can still do that dunk. That's amazing.
Yes.
That was amazing. And he was 22 when he was doing that dunk at that time. So I found that to be just outstanding. Even the kid from the Milwaukee Bucks, when he came out with his white man can't jump kind of
with the high shorts
kind of get up, I thought that was dope, man. I thought that was probably the best prop. It was very impressive. But Derrick Jones and Aaron Gordon put on the show. They put on an absolute show. They proved to everybody that they are indeed two of the best dunkers in basketball right now. I hope that the dunk contest continues to be this way. I hope that All-Star Weekend continues to be this way. Of course, everybody's been emotional because Kobe and former Commissioner Stern is not there. You know, they're in our hearts and their families and their prayers or whatnot. But, it's just one of those things. You know, it was just great to see it, and it's going to culminate tonight with the All-Star game. We're going to see the best players in the world go up against each other in a bit of a pickup game of basketball. So.
Yeah, defense has been selective at all, if at all.
Yeah.
And we blatantly seen that in the rookie game where, you know, about the last 5 minutes of the rookie game, I mean, they were just clearing it out literally for
– And that was great too, right?
Yeah, it was very entertaining.
The rookie game was great.
Yeah, it was very entertaining. You know, it just turned into a dunk contest.
Right.
About, you know, it
was, mm-hmm,
at the end of the – now – I have friends of mine who are just basketball purists. Okay. They hated that. Like, oh, why aren't these guys competing to the end? Man, we were saying, I got a partner of mine, you know, my partner, Landreas Dante Williams, he's all that. The rookie game has turned into a clown show. I mean, my God, he sounds like a grumpy old man. But, you know, he's everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
I personally liked it, and the NBA loved it because everybody was entertained.
And we kind of forget that that's the job,
right?
Of sports to entertain.
When you see Luka Doncic come baseline, and you know, is he the highest jumper? No, but he made his two hand dunk. He hung on the rim in the process.
Yes,
he smiled. Everybody had a lot of fun. You know, we got a chance to see Zion, even though he only played 9 games so far, but he made it a heck of an impression within those 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
He participated. This man dunked the ball so hard that he went off and messed up the rim. I mean, that's what people are paying for.
They want to see that.
Yes. You know, everybody cleared it out for him. He, even though he missed his two dunks, but they were very impressive misses. You know, it was just, you know, All-Star Weekend, you know, this right here was probably the most, I mean, I, like I said, that's our job to become prisoners of the moment. People accuse, oh, you got to become prisoners of the moment. That's what we're supposed to report on the moment.
Right.
Okay. I was thoroughly entertained over this weekend, and I gave multiple kudos to the NBA for what they've put on. I'm waiting to see what they're going to bring out for the All-Star game. Are we going to see competitiveness, at least for the first 3.5 quarters?
And let's be honest, going into this, the All-Star game had a very big job made all the more harder by the tragedy in Calabasas with Kobe Bryant. You know that they felt a lot more pressure to put on an event that would be just strike the right note between celebrating the game, mourning what was lost, and also celebrating the career of what was lost. And
absolutely,
so far they have hit the exact note, but it's just a very tricky balance for the NBA to do, and just so soon before that league showcase up in Chicago.
Yeah. And kudos to the NBA for changing the name of the All-Star Trophy.
Yep, they did that.
Absolutely.
Today. They made the Kobe Bryant Trophy. I'm surprised they don't change the NBA Trophy, the championship trophy, to the Kobe Bryant Trophy. And I'm sure that might happen a little sooner, a little later down the road as we get into the playoffs.
Yes. There are talks of them retiring 24-8.
Across every team.
Yes.
Like what Jackie Robinson's 42.
Right, which rightfully so. I believe that would – because, you know, this man was taken in, you know, his prime of his life. You know, it was – and, you know, his face was good, you know, amongst everybody, so.
Yeah, and he had so much he was just getting ready for the second act of his career, and he finally figured out what that act was going to entail.
Yeah.
And he was just about ready to implement it. And, of course, the other people who have lost their lives in that tragedy as well, the Altobellis.
Yes.
Of course, can't forget those people and the sacrifices that they have made. Mm-hmm. All right, last three guys to do a podcast. We're about getting close to wrapping things up. A couple of issues we need to discuss before we take our break. I want to talk a little bit Georgia State baseball. They got a new coach, Brad Stromdahl, and he just did something that the team has not done in a very long time. I don't have the exact number. He went 3-0 in his introductory weekend victories over Cincinnati. That was an NCAA regional team. They knocked off UCLA last season. St. Peter's and St. John's, all three teams lost, and as Georgia State goes 3-0, they only had 8 wins all of last season. So that program may be turning the corner very quickly. Coach Stromdahl built Georgia Gwinnett College, an NAIA team, from literally nothing to a team that just went to the NAIA World Series twice in Lewiston, Idaho. And also with the college football carousel that's been going on the last couple weeks. Again, we really kind of haven't touched on this. Of course, Mel Tucker, former Georgia coach, is now the man at Michigan State. And, yep, of course, Coach Tucker kind of gets the heel award, because right before he took that job, he was meeting with Colorado boosters saying, yes, I will stay your coach. So he was trying to do that while his agent was finalizing a deal for him to leave. It was a dinner deal, and the host of the dinner is thinking about sending Tucker the bill for the dinner.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I believe.
So folks over in Colorado not happy that they thought that that they're going to have to search for a new head coach after Coach Tucker said, you know what, I'm staying here. And then 12 hours later says, you know what, I look really good in Kelly Green.
Oh, that's like a slap in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to get on, you know, we were discussing Kobe Bryant, and, you know, it's a couple of things that, you know, that's been going on in reference to, you know, it's been like, in my opinion, since Kobe's passed away, Kobe was such an influential and celebrated individual that you got certain inconsiderate people out here who just, you know, they're reaching to smear this man's name. And, you know, I'm going to speak on the Gayle King situation that was just completely out of line for this woman.
Well, Gayle kind of got – all right, let's be honest. I work for CBS. Well, technically I work for a CBS subcontractor. My company subcontracts me to work for CBS. Gayle King got set up by her editor. The interview that she had did not have to be cut the way that it was cut.
Okay, that's interesting, because she didn't have to bring it up in the first place.
Well, she did bring it up. I mean, you know, she did bring it up, but it was part of a wide-ranging conversation.
Yes, but just to even bring something like – and this is the point, you know – first of all, you know, it was, you know, Kobe's, you know, first of all, I like to give props to Lisa Leslie for maneuvering her way through the question. Mm-hmm. I appreciate Lisa Leslie for that, because she was a friend of Kobe's.
Yes.
But with Gayle King, to ask about the Eagle Colorado situation without even dealing with the facts of the case. I mean, if you're going to ask about the case, that's her job in the media. She's getting paid millions of dollars to do her due diligence.
But you don't ask Lisa Leslie about that.
Right. You really don't. Who was still in a state of mourning like all of us were.
Mm-hmm.
And to ambush Lisa Leslie with that question, I mean, you could tell that she was holding back from crying. And to, you know, to call Kobe Bryant's accuser a victim, it never went to court. Kobe Bryant, it was proven that he did not rape the girl. The girl was actually seen at a party allegedly bragging about having had sex with Kobe and bragging about the size of his manhood in the process, and have five friends that are willing to testify on Kobe Bryant's defense of him not even raping her. And right. she was heard speaking about what she was going to do with the money once she received the money, allegedly.
Right.
You know, so she didn't even, if you're going to tell the truth, let's tell all of it. And then that leads us to Mr. Barkley. I mean, I don't understand what is wrong with Charles Barkley. You're going to talk about, the Eagle Colorado case is part of Kobe's legacy. Sorry, it didn't even go to court because the defense had such a weak case. They just threw it out and gave the young lady some money. I think they gave her about $2.5 million and gave her a no interview clause. You can't even talk about it going forward.
Right.
Kobe was exonerated, so you could put it as part of legacy, but he beat the case. There's nothing to discuss. You know, and it's interesting because, and I go to the mainstream media, I got a side of the mainstream media. All right, we lost Kirk Douglas a little while ago.
Yes, at 103.
103 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one brought up the fact that Kirk Douglas was accused of rape back in 1950. It's true.
Yep.
Nobody brought it up. When David Bowie left, nobody brought up his past. When Robert Kraft leaves, I'm pretty sure nobody's going to bring up his past. Because they don't sit back and smear people. They don't smear people like that. But when it comes to someone like Kobe, I'm like, my goodness. I mean, there's nowhere to go with this.
Right.
With Kobe. I mean, this man died with his daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, then, you know, when to see Oprah Winfrey go on TV and she's talking about Gail's not doing well because she received the backlash of the century from the African-American community. And not just the African-American community, but everybody, including Snoop, who later had to apologize because he's on the show with Martha Stewart. And I'm pretty sure the producers, you know, like, hey, Snoop, you might come to work one day and the lights might not be off and you realize that we moved the show without you. So he went off and apologized, but I'm pretty sure that Snoop is on probation behind that. You know, you're not allowed to go. You're not allowed to backtrack when you're right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Charles Barkley went from saying that Kobe Bryant reminded him of one of his children. He said on national television, you work with a man that was Kobe's teammate, one of the most important teammates that Kobe's ever had. And if you guys have seen Shaquille O'Neal's reaction publicly to Kobe Bryant's death, which is, it's even weird for me being saying Kobe Bryant in death in the same sense. I'm still getting over it.
Yes.
But that man cried on national television.
Yes, he did.
I mean, and everybody, we all felt him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But for Charles to go off and say that Kobe Bryant's no hero, man, that was just that. For you to say that Kobe Bryant is no hero, Charles Barkley.
Well, Charles always says what's on his mind. I mean,
but how do you go from that man was one of your remind you of one of your kids to saying that Kobe Bryant was no hero? I mean, that's the in the words of Daniel, that has to be when Kobe Bryant left us. That was maybe we witnessed unbelievably in disbelief the largest tragedy, and we've seen a lot of them over the course of since sports has been a mainstream topic in American lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
But this is by far one of the largest tragedies in sports history, and the only reason why it's such a large tragedy because Kobe Bryant is a hero. So but Charles always saying something crazy.
Yeah,
he always saying something crazy. But sometimes you just got to know when to talk and when not to talk.
Well said.
Yes, sir.
Daniel, well, you were talking. You're done.
I'm good.
You're good.
Yeah.
All right, well,
yeah. He put that on. Yeah, he put the cap on this show.
Yeah.
Good job, Leon.
He did. Right. Good job with that, Leon. And with that, we're going to take our break from The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. We'll be up with you next week this time. And I want to thank our guests, including Georgia State women's basketball coach Gene Hill, to discuss the state of the Panthers, and hopefully that program has got it going and it's being trended in the right direction, and we'll be talking more about their success for the later part of the year. All right, so for Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown, I'm John Morgo. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition. We'll see you in 7 days with another concise, action-packed hour full of commentary about the world of sports in Atlanta and beyond.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah, go for it.
And reference to Kirk Douglas, that everything was alleged. Allegedly.
Right.
For anybody listening, allegedly. Right. Allegedly did. Allegedly. Allegedly.
Right.
All right.
Right. Same with David Bowie. All right. We'll be with you next week. Thank you so much.